Coming up, we're going to talk about how to overcome one of the biggest time wasters at work and, quite frankly, our lives. And then we're going to look at the older boss's younger worker dynamic and how it's hurting productivity and what we can do about it. Let's go. Hey, welcome to the Ken Coleman Show, where we're completely dedicated to helping you grow personally so that you can advance professionally and lead effectively. So we're going to talk about time wasting. Oh my gosh, it sucks the life out of an organization. It could suck the life out of a person. What am I talking about? Meetings. Oh my gosh. My good friend Pat Lencioni once wrote a book, Death by Meeting. I thought it was one of the greatest book titles of all time. And boy, it hit a nerve with me. I know some of you right now are listening to this, watching this, and you're going, I feel like that's me. I'm dying slowly because I'm in meetings all the time. We're going to talk specifically about bad meetings, wasteful meetings, unprepared meetings. So do your one-on-one meetings with your boss or with coworkers, meetings. It doesn't always have to be one-on-one, but we're going to kind of have a one-on-one context because I want to allow, I want to give you some insight that you can lead up. So I do want to frame this into meetings in general, but let's talk specifically about fixing your one-on-ones today with your leader. If they're not doing this and doing this well, I think this is something you can lead up. In other words, your influence can change your meetings with them, okay? So here's what we know. We all know that the unnecessary or a poorly run meeting are big time wasters, and as a result, energy suckers. I mean, there's just something about us when we feel like I'm not using my time well, it sucks the energy right out of us. So time wasting becomes energy sucking, right? But your time with the leader doesn't have to be one of those meetings. And in fact, I think it can actually become something that moves from frustration to inspiration, and you begin to see this as one of the things you look forward to. But I'm going to take a wild guess that most of you don't look forward to your one-on-ones with your leaders. And I get it. But I think there's hope today. And I want to help you solve those problems so that you can position those meetings for a solution and then promotion. So here's what you need to do. All right, first, you need to share a clear agenda. Notice I said share, not have. Of course, we got to have a clear agenda first, but you got to share it. So let's talk about the have. All right, so we got to think beforehand. I got my one-on-one coming up, and I got a lot going on in my universe, or maybe I don't. But I've got something that's, whether I've got a lot going on or I don't, the point is I need to lock in on what do I need from this meeting. Okay? So we're thinking ahead of time. What answers do I need? What ideas do I need? What proposals do I need approval on? There's got to be a real priority for this meeting. And so once I know that, hello, I have it, now I'm going to communicate that at the start of the meeting. Hey, listen, don't know what you have on your agenda. Let me tell you what I think is really, really important, what I need from you. By the way, this is showing them value. Hey, I need you. Start with that. Is this manipulation? No. But it also helps to play to their ego a little bit to go, I need this. And hopefully their healthy leader, a healthy leader is going to go, all right. That's my job. My job is to serve you. Unhealthy leaders are going to go, right? But in a healthy leadership situation, I need you. I need an answer from you. I need approval from you. I need an idea from you. So communicate that right out of the gate. And that helps frame this. Oh, we're not. By the way, I don't mind a little bit of ice breaking, but there are times where an icebreaker, we just don't have time for that. I was in a meeting recently with a high-level leader at Ramsey, and I hadn't met with him in a while. It started off with a lot of, you know, and I found 3-4 minutes in, we're kind of just chewing the fat. And I just went, hey, listen, sorry to do this. I need to lock our focus on. We have limited time, and I really need to talk, get your insight on this. It was fine. Nobody was offended. All right, that's one. Two, after we've got our agenda in place, okay, so we've laid it out, and this is what we need accomplished and why. Keep it short. Keep it short. Don't try to accomplish too much in one meeting. Meetings need to be hyper-focused moments of conversation. And if to the extent that it's hyper-focused, then we can't have too much. Meetings need to be focused on a high priority, not a laundry list. That is my complete belief. Laundry lists are for emails. Go type yourself to your heart's content on emails on laundry lists. A high priority, that's a meeting. Okay? And here's something else I found in doing some research on this topic. You should expect to only get 25 meetings of focused attention during a meeting. This is not my opinion. This is coming from the Pomodoro technique. I didn't know what this was until 2 days ago. I looked it up. And this was a productivity hack that was kind of suggested in the 1980s, developed from a guy by the name of Francesco Cirillo. Or Cirillo, sorry. Thank you for the pronunciation. Francesco Cirillo. That's a word. I like that. I like saying that guy's name. Francesco Cirillo. I don't even know that's how you say it. I like it. He was a researcher. And he discovered, watch this, that 25 minutes in a focused interval, so a 25-minute meeting was the max before his brain needed a short rest. So he began to feel this, think this, did the research, this is true. So hold on, hold the phone right here. If research has discovered that 25 minutes is the average max of focus that we can give, can I ask the fine people, why in the H-E double hockey stick are we having meetings that are longer than 25 minutes? If it needs to be an all-day meeting, guess what we need? 25 minutes on. I don't know what the off should be, but certainly 10 minutes off. 25 minutes back on. 10 minutes off. Hello. So this is an unveiling of this concept. It's going to drive Alex nuts, but I'm here to tell you 25 minutes. And if you have an hour meeting schedule, then we are going to take 5 minutes to blow some steam off or 2 minutes. And then we come back on 25. So next hour meeting, Alex, I'm holding you to this as I really believe this is true. 25 minutes is all that the brain can focus. And then at some point, we've got the diminishing returns. All right? Now, that's just my little soapbox. Number three. Okay? Quick review. Number one, have and share a very clear agenda with your leader. Two, keep it short, 25 minutes or less. And number three, come to the table with solutions. I said earlier that I really believe you could bucket down the need for a meeting to a priority where I need permission or approval. I need a solution or I need an idea, right? We just kind of bucket the needs into those areas. You could add to it if you've got an idea. All right. Now, here's the key. That's the priority. Okay. But even though you're asking your leader for one of those three things, if let's go to the idea and the solution that you're asking them for, you should have some ideas. Okay, I'm sitting with the leader. I think we need some ideas on this. Here are a couple that I brought to the table. That's my point. Don't come empty-handed. Second, if you're asking for a solution, then you should probably have one or two in your pocket to go, I've thought through this and I've solutioned for this problem. What do you think? They may go, that's it. They may say, I like this, but my mind goes here. And now we're ideating. But you are participating. You're not just asking. You aren't just sucking something from them. You are participating. And this is huge. Now, one last thing here. In a meeting with your leader, you want to lead up, you want to influence your leader. When you share your voice, I got a little process for you. Number one, cover what you think. Then address why you think that or why you feel that, why you believe this. And then how things would change or how things would look if your what was implemented. So let me review that. Your what? You got to share the what. It's what I think, what I believe. This is just saying, so I'll give you just a quick, I'm going to make this example up. I believe, you're sitting with your leader, you say, I believe we need to start offering more free webinars. Okay, that's the what. So you're going, these could be 20-minute webinars. This is what we would do. We would send out 3 emails. We would do 4 social media posts. And you're beginning to describe the what. And these would be 15-minute webinars. And we would give this item away for free. And then that would lead to a gated process to where the customers would get the opportunity to buy said product. So that you're just, here's my idea. This is the what, right? And that's what you're sharing. And then you quickly go, here's why I think we should try this. I did some research. I found that this kind of technique works. I saw a competitor do it this way, whatever. You're giving the why. I think it would increase our engagement here. I think we could see a bump. You give them the why. And then finally, if this works, this is how we're going to be able to grow the business. And so you're just doing a really nice little simple outline. Now, here's why. This is so important. If you take ownership of your meetings with your leader, you're intentional in the ways that I've just described. You can turn those one-on-one meetings with your leader into the most productive meeting of your week. And as a result, your leader starts to adopt the process because they're seeing value from it, and you can influence up. And more importantly, you get more influenced by what you've done. Hey, I want you to stop right now and just listen to this. I want you to imagine life 4 months from now, but you're actually making a starting salary of $75,000. Bethel Tech has a front-end web development micro-credential that you can earn in just 15 weeks for only $5,000. Coding skills are in high demand right now, and you learn them in less than 4 months. So whether you want to level up your career and salary, or you've always wanted to be in tech, you can get started on Bethel Tech's front-end web development micro-credential or a data science micro-credential, another hot field. Now's the time. Let's go. The next class starts April 29th, and the Bethel Tech folks offer you 10% off because you're a Ken Coleman Show listener. Go to betheltech.net/Ken Coleman for details. Terms and conditions do apply. Welcome back to the Ken Coleman Show. Hey, if you're enjoying the show, I would ask you to help us in two ways. If you're watching the show via YouTube, would you like one of the videos if it's helping you in any way? Would you subscribe to the channel and would you share? A fun comment every once in a while is great. If you're listening via podcast app, or an app rather, 5-star review, a comment, and a share would be appreciated as well. Okay, a Business Insider article came to my attention, and this is about the productivity issue we're seeing in America. Now, this can feel like a piece of data that some of you don't see because you're not studying the stuff that I'm studying every day, and I get it. But this also speaks to a lot of tension in the workplace. And I think this hits a lot of us. Those of us who want to grow professionally, you're going to eventually grow yourself into a management or leadership role. This is just the reality, okay? And as we are in this really interesting time of multiple generations in the workplace, we have 5 right now, just to set the context for this. We have 5 generations in the American workplace. The boomer generation, okay? The Gen X generation, that's my generation. We've got Gen Z, millennials, and Xers, and boomers, and still some of the older just above the boomers. So this is a really interesting mix, okay? And so with all this colliding, there are great differences in the way these generations were raised, the way they lived, what they experienced, and of course they've got different modes of operation. No hate either way. I don't like the generalizations out there. In fact, we tend to fall into this, these metaphors or these insults about the lazy or sensitive young worker versus the old fart boomer who is unwilling to change. And I don't think that's correct across the board, number one, and I know it's not helpful. Okay. So let's dive into the numbers with that being the context that we've got this really interesting mix of generations working. Gen Z and millennial workers are seeing their productivity take a hit because of, this is from new data, friction with older generations. Okay. And I work with Gen Zers and I see this. I see sometimes unintended friction with me in maybe how something is communicated, how something is done. I've experienced it myself. I'm raising Gen Z right now. So I certainly understand this and I see this. And I think this is an important conversation. But Gen Z and millennial workers are saying, hey, my productivity is being affected by the older boomer or the cranky Gen Xer. Okay. Daniel Jolas, who's one of the research assistants on this study, said that we found that there are large age gaps between younger employees and older managers. You could absolutely see a boomer leader with a Gen Z follower, and that's a massive gap and creates a lot of natural tensions. And so what we're seeing is younger employees with older managers are suffering lower productivity. We're not seeing that in the case of, more on that in a second, older workers where the script is flipped. That's interesting. More on that in a minute. So here are the numbers. 37% of Gen Z and 30% of millennials say they aren't getting much done. By comparison, only 14% of boomers reported having trouble knocking out their to-do lists. Okay, now spare the jokes. Come on. Don't jump into the jokes right away. But this is the reality. Employees, now this is really interesting, and I touched on this a moment ago. Employees whose managers were more than 12 years older were almost two times as likely to say they had low productivity and nearly three times more likely to say they're extremely dissatisfied. So can we admit, leaders, can we admit that there's some stuff that's getting lost in translation? I don't know how you don't. There's some generational gaps. Look, the numbers are what they are. Now, some of you want to go, and here's the temptation. Well, this younger generation is just so flippant sensitive. They're a bunch of snowflakes. I've said stuff like that before, not categorizing an entire generation, but using the snowflake, you know, analogy. And you can't just do that. There's just a different lens. In other words, leaders, can we just say this for simplicity? Gen Z is wearing different glasses when they come into work than you're wearing. Millennials are wearing different glasses when they come into work than you're wearing if you're a Gen X or boomer. Hey, listen, boomers, not picking on you, but Gen X, we're wearing different glasses than you're wearing. And now you can just go down the list and flip it. Gen X, you got to understand this, and everybody's got to understand that cultural influence is massive. And each generation is different for a reason. And thus, we're wearing different glasses. In other words, the way we see the world. So we've got to understand that. And instead of being irritated by it, I think we should be inspired by it. Because I think those different sets of glasses, if we can stay in the silly little analogy, if I were to take a millennial's glasses and on a particular topic in the workforce, all right, in the meeting. Not talking about politics or religion. I'm talking about just we're in a meeting and maybe there's a millennial that's got a different opinion of mine. If I am essentially going to say, I want to see it through your eyes, why do you see it this way? I am essentially taking their glasses, putting them on my face and going, oh. And all of a sudden I have understanding. It's pretty fascinating. Now here's what's interesting. There is more to this than just the glasses and perspective. Remember, I just said, to go back to the data I just told you, employees with managers who were more than 12 years older than them were almost two times more likely to say that their productivity was lower and their dissatisfaction was higher. All right, well, that's where we left you. Flip it now. Older workers, so let's just say a boomer or a Gen Xer, who had much younger managers did not report decreased productivity. Does that make them better? No, but it makes them really different. Why? Well, I'll tell you why. Can we just chalk up the fact that there's incredible value in experience and character development? So of course I'm going to probably be a little bit more mature in getting stuff done and dealing with difficult people. I should, for crying out loud. I'm almost 50 years old. Come on, Coleman, grow up. I mean, come on. So let's it doesn't make me better than a millennial or an Xer. It just means I'm more experienced. I've already had 3x the drama that they're dealing with. I've just got a bunch of calluses. I'm an old fart. I just can grump my way through it. Let's just be honest. It doesn't mean I'm better, and let's stop saying it like I'm better. No, you know what it is? I'm just more experienced. Maybe I'm more tired. I just don't have the energy to get freaked out like they do. Whatever it is. Now, let's keep going. The discussions around different generations of the workplace are falling back on too many hypotheticals. On stereotypes. And so we've got to stop that. All right? Because here's the reality. The newest employees in the workplace often can bring fresh ideas and fresh perspectives because they're going to question old assumptions. But the older workers are often best at saying, you know what? We can be supportive. We can collaborate. They're willing to do some things. They're better locker room people because, again, they've been around longer. So they both bring something to the table. But younger leaders and older workers that are not in management, they don't always get the recognition they deserve. This is another leadership challenge. Hey, how about the older workers? You know what? They got more to offer than just they're eating grass and pasturing out there and we're eventually going to see them wander off. No, they got more to offer. And then young people, they're bringing like a lack of experience, which makes them go, anything is possible. They're bringing innovations. They're bringing new ways of doing things. There's so much value to get them all in the room together. Because as our population is aging, we're going to have to create fulfilling environments for the older generation. And oh, by the way, you younger people and leaders, if you can match up in a buddy system, your younger workers with your older workers, I think you could have a workforce that is a game changer. So instead of the divisions, let's take the best of each generation and let's put them together and let's challenge the old farts to be willing to try a new idea. Let's challenge the young whippersnappers to listen to an old person every once in a while and sit back and watch the magic happen. That's the leadership challenge before us in this age where we've got a lot of different generations and a lot of different viewpoints coming together to do something good. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. So, are you an introvert or are you an extrovert? And I think the world has been unfairly built towards the extroverts. And I'm an extrovert, so I can say that, right? And an extroverted world can be energy sapping for an introvert. And we all have different batteries, if you will, social batteries. And it's okay. There's no right. There's no wrong. But this is important. Your social battery needs to stay at a healthy level or else you get burned out. And you get burned out, that affects you physically, mentally, emotionally, and it can really affect you in your professional growth. So it's important that you know what your social battery is and then how to recharge if a lot of the work activities you do drain you. I want you to think about starting therapy with BetterHelp. BetterHelp is flexible to fit into your schedule because it's completely online. It's super easy to get started with just a short questionnaire that then matches you with a licensed therapist. This is my favorite part. They allow you to switch therapists at any time for no extra cost because you got to find your person. So I want you to find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Ken today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Ken. All right, welcome back to the Ken Coleman Show. Let's get to Marie, who's joining us in New Orleans, Louisiana. Oh, before I get to Marie, I got to tell you about something that we're doing. It's absolutely free. I love doing free stuff. And this is what we're doing. For those of you right now that are considering what's next, for me professionally? I want to advance. I want to grow, but I'm not sure. Maybe I've got some options. that I can't choose between. I don't have some clarity, or I don't have confidence needed to make a choice to strike out. I've been there. I know what that's like. And we're doing a webinar coming up March 19th. That's a Tuesday, March 19th, 11 a.m. Central, noon Eastern. March 19th, Tuesday, 11 a.m. Central, 12 noon. And I'm going to walk you through a very simple process, and then we're going to take your questions. And the idea here is we want to get clear so that we can confidently make the next move to devise a plan or to step onto a path that has been made available. That's our full focus. No strings attached. It's a free webinar. Go to kencoleman.com/webinars, kencoleman.com/webinars. Okay, back to Marie now. Marie, you're on the Ken Coleman Show.
Hey, Ken, how you doing? Thank you for taking the call.
I'm doing well. How can I help today?
Hey, I've been taking a few assessments, career assessments, to try to figure out what career to actually invest myself in.
Have you taken mine?
I did, and I lost my results about a year ago.
You lost them?
Yeah, I kind of deleted my emails.
Oh, no. I wonder, I'll tell you what we're going to do. When the call is over, Christian is going to get your email, and okay. I bet you we can find your results. We're gonna absolutely try. That's my guarantee to you. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Go ahead.
So what I'm going to now is like the majority of the assessments are giving me results that I actually don't like. It's saying things like administrative and accounting.
Okay.
And I kind of don't want that to be.
Let's start with what you want.
I don't know exactly what I want. I just know I like learning on the job, and I like building and, you know, creating, making things.
Oh, let's stay there.
Okay.
What kind of things do you like to create?
Well, I had a carpentry job. I like that. I have a couple of ideas for inventions. I would like to, you know, have the skills to know how to make my own inventions.
Yeah, but you're giving me a lot of great information. And without telling us the idea, is the invention, what does the invention do? And I'm not trying to get your idea. I'm saying does it make something? Is it something? Is it a tool? What is it?
It would solve a problem.
What problem would it solve?
I think I would have to just like tell you what it is.
No, you wouldn't. No, because you're not telling me what it is. What problem does it solve? Because it doesn't tell us how it solves it.
A problem for parents of young kids or infants.
Okay, great. So that's really awesome. So now all of a sudden you just identified a problem that parents are having with young kids. You know what the problem is, and what is the problem? Because again, you're not telling us what the idea is and how it solves, but what's the problem?
Having to buy multiple different large ticket items for your kids.
Okay,
I
great.
I think I have a solution on how you can like cut down a few of those.
Okay, great. So the solution does what?
It replaces like three products.
Right. But what's the end result of that? Saves them
money. Space.
Come on. Right? Now, see, we didn't give your idea away. See, now you can trust me. I'm not going to give your idea away. But my point is I'm trying to find some patterns here for you. Because when somebody says, Ken, I don't know what I want to do, I know that that's not true. Because you actually know what you want to do. You know what you're struggling with is articulating it in a specific way, or your brain tries to articulate it, but you start coming up with all the hurdles.
Okay.
Am I right?
I just feel like my brain is unorganized.
It probably is because you're creative. I don't know many creatives that they could say their brain is really well organized. Does that sound about right?
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. You're talking to a guy whose brain is not organized. I can't find my keys half of the days of the week. And my wife put a really nice wood bowl on the top of the kitchen counter for me to put my keys in when I walk in from work for the sole purpose of finding my keys, but my brain is always creating ideas. In fact, have you ever created an idea in the middle of another idea?
Yeah.
Come on, Marie. You and I are kindred spirits. I understand you. I see you, right? You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. I get you. There's nothing wrong with you. My point is you get on one idea, and the next thing you know, you get distracted, and then another idea and another idea comes out. That's what you're dealing with. I get that. So you know how you solve that?
No.
Emotion.
Write it down? Oh.
Sure. Sure. Write it down. That's part of it. But you've got to get to the core emotion, because the way you get hyper-focused on an idea is to come up with an idea and dive into that idea and tie that idea to something that matters deeply to you, which is why I was challenging you on what was the real thing that you are bringing to with this idea you had. You had an invention. Who cares if that invention ever happens? That's not my point today. My point today is, what were you giving those parents? And you were giving them time and money, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you care about that. Now, you may not care about that particular invention as much as another one. But when you were doing construction, what did you care about? When you were doing carpentry, what did you care about that was attached to that job?
Making a quality house at the end of the day.
That's it. Craftsmanship that lasts, that works. I think that's what drives you, yes?
Yeah.
Okay, then. So there's the creative element, the imagination piece, then there's the execution piece. And I think you get excited about combining those two things, imagining and then creating, actually executing on the creative idea. But now let's get it done.
Yeah.
Okay. So carpentry is one thing. You did it. You loved it. I would expand on that and not limit yourself to carpentry. But if I know that I love this in the past, how would I expand on that dream a little bit? Excuse me, not expand on the dream, but the job, and go turn that into something that would feel like a dream. Okay, I know I did carpentry in the past, and I enjoyed it, but what's one thing that I would love to actually create, craft, build, that I would get excited about if I got paid to do that all day long? That's an idea. I'm not asking to answer that on the air. I don't want to put you on the spot. But that's the idea. Are you getting that?
Yeah.
All right, so let's stop thinking, and let's choose something for fun. You ready? I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay.
There's no wrong answer, Marie. Okay. If I gave you the money that you need to make and I added a 20% on top of it, and I said, for 3 months, Marie, you get to do this thing. You're about to tell me what this thing is. It's 3 months. You're going to get paid 20% more than you make now, and you're not going to suck at it. You're going to be good at it, but you don't have to commit to it. We're just going to try this. What's the thing you would do first? Fill in the blank.
Remodeling houses.
Boy, that was fast. How quickly did that come to you while I was setting that up?
That's what I always want to do.
It's what you've always wanted to do, and I knew we were going to get to that. How did I know? Because that's the simplest question of all. It turns your brain off. So what has to happen from today until that moment where you can start remodeling houses? Give me the 30-second version. Just tick off a couple things. This has to happen, this has to happen, this has to happen, and then I could do that. What has to happen? Tell me.
I think I have to go and get a degree so I can actually know what I'm doing.
Not true. You do not have to get a degree to remodel a house. You know what you need to do? I'm going to tell you. You need to go back and get a carpentry job and get back working for a general contractor who specializes in remodels. That's the job I'd go get. You are in a trade, and trades make really good money. There is a starvation right now for carpenters. I believe, Marie, that you could be making $25, $30, $40, $45 an hour. I may be a little high on that. Go research it in New Orleans. You go get into carpentry work. You just knock it down for a GC. Then you start asking around who's doing home remodeling. You go get a job for them. All of a sudden, you're making really good money and you're working for somebody who's doing what you want to do one day. That's the only education you need. Oh, by the way, you get paid to do it, paid handsomely while you're learning.
Okay.
Marie, you with me?
Yeah, I just have a concern.
What's your concern?
Thinking about like there's no real good benefits in retirement.
Sure, there is. When you're making that really good money, what's a good carpenter making in New Orleans per hour?
I have no idea.
You need to find out.
Okay.
Hey, Alex, pull up for me really fast. What is the median income, medium hourly range for carpenters in the United States? Marie, while he's pulling that up, you don't need benefits. You know what you need? really awesome income, and you can start investing on your own. You get a SmartVestor Pro. $51,000 is the median right now. How much are you making now?
Nothing.
Nothing. $51,000 would be pretty awesome, wouldn't it, Marie?
Yeah.
By the way, that's the median. That means it's in the middle. You can make six figures as a carpenter. And if you were investing 15% of that, you wouldn't have to worry about retirement, would you, Marie?
I guess you're right.
I know I'm right. Ain't no guessing about it. So get after it. That's your job. Okay. Hang on the line. I'm going to get you a copy of my best-selling book, The Proximity Principle, and Christian's going to find your assessment results, but you are going to go get a job as a carpenter. Stat! This is The Ken Coleman Show.
Thanks for listening to The Ken Coleman Show. For more, you can find the show on demand wherever you listen to podcasts and watch the show on YouTube. You can also find Ken across all social media by following @KenColeman.